The Hill in the Dark Grove by Liam Higginson, read by Richard Elvin. The inhabitants of rude and mountainous countries are more generally affected with superstition than those who dwell in plains and cultivated regions. That the scenery of a country has a considerable influence on the habits of the natives is indisputable. Hence, the manners of mountaineers are more robust and impetuous than those of lowlanders, and their imaginations, darkened by their native scenes, create wild images and phantoms dire, strange as their hills and gloomy as their storms. The Cambro Briton, Volume 1, May 1820. Prologue. March. The lambs in the snowdrift. Uphill he went, in meagre moonlight through the blizzard, a dark speck dwarfed against the monumental land. Each stride he clawed and wrested from the grasping snow, which swallowed him to waist height as he trailed the dog, coursing somewhere far across the buried mountainside. He had bet his life on her ability, on the trust that he had bred her well and trained her better, and that she knew, instinctively, why they had come. She would not hear his whistles or commands, nor he her barks, for the wind roared down upon them from the peaks and buffeted his stinging ears, drowned his voice, cracked his lips to uselessness. Nor could they see each other or the flock, for the night was deep and the flurries thick and the moon a patch of pallid filterings through the clouds. This lofty world was made of shapes and shadows. Here, a drift that blanketed a dry stone wall over which the sheep had fled. There, the branches of a hawthorn, sprouting lonely and begrudging from a blasted crag. High above, the faintest intimations of Crib Goch and Gladerfawr and Moel Hebog against the falling sky. Only there because he knew they were. His memory willing them weakly into being. Yrwyddfa, too, had vanished in the whiteout, mightiest of all those mountains, and now no more than a vague and looming vastness at the limit of his snow-blind eyes. And he himself, a shapeless thing among them, a wanderer adrift of time, as gnarled as the hawthorn and ancient as the mountains and as rugged as the wall. When he paused and stood to catch his breath, one might have guessed him for a scarecrow, dressed in many stranger's clothes, an old tweed cap, a hiking coat of oddly modern make, a bright red scarf, the only colour in that deathly scene, chosen, perhaps, so that if he failed, he might be found. But when he moved again, it was with undiminished purpose, heaving himself upwards on arthritic knees and frost-numbed feet, to which he brooked no slowing in his march. Uphill, uphill. The flock was close. He knew it in his bones. He came to a place where the gusts raced, howling, between boulders bigger than his house, and here he had to plant his shovel in the frozen pack to keep his footing on the scarp. Around him, tufts of brown grass, holes the dog had marked, too deep or hard for her to dig. And the dog herself, he saw, with pride, barely visible in the swirling blizzard, pawing through a snowbank where the sheep lay huddled and entombed. A handful of ewes had struggled free already from the drifts, and now stood snow-dagged and forlorn and bleating for their lambs. He knelt beside the little sheepdog on the drifted snow, packed hard up here and polished by the gale, pristine and crunchy and a terrible lifeless white. She nosed ahead of him into her excavation, and he had to seize her scruff with blockish hands and drag her back so he could dig. Carefully now, he told himself. The smallest avalanche would swallow one and all, or sweep them off the cliffs into the valley far below. Somewhere down there, his wife was waiting. The pimp